Wolfsearch.com and simulcast with WolfSpiritRadio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
Greetings, sisters and brothers and indeterminate beings. How are we all today? I've had a very interesting week. Not been doing anything. It's like I got no car and no money, so I haven't been out anywhere. Much to certain people's chagrin. The weather has been absolutely freezing for the end of August. Last night, I actually lit a fire in the stove in the kitchen because it was getting a bit cold. So so weird weather, but I'm very grateful. I mean, we have had very, very strong winds here, but nothing like you guys have been having with, especially down in the Gulf area. So. Do hang on to your hats about what's going on there. And here we are. So, I'm happy to do readings. I know that some people in the Revolution Radio chat room asked when I was going to do readings again, and today is one of those days. If you're able to hear me, I hope. Thank you for tuning in. This is Journeys. Today I have no one to journey with me yet, but I am asking for calls if you want to come in on the Wolf Spirit Radio. Actually, I don't know if that's been forwarded to me. I'm not entirely sure. That's great. I'm sure that the Revolution Radio one will work. And if not, some of you know me on Skype and can call in. So if you have any issues or anything you want to discuss, we have 1 hour to do so. Right, so let me just check the chat rooms and see if there's any messages. What is cold for you? Oh, right, okay. So when I talk about what's cold, I think now we work in centigrade in Britain now, and... So I'd say it was down to about 7 degrees last night, which is pretty chilly. 10 degrees is more or less comfortable. You can walk outside with a shirt. 7 degrees, you couldn't walk outside in a t-shirt. It would be that'd be too cold for you. But I have been investigating fire technologies. A friend of mine who lives close to me, and we've done a couple of projects together. We've been working on the 12-volt amplifier system, but we also talk about rocket stoves. And I spent a nice evening with him in front of our stove, watching YouTubes about various forms of rocket stove. I don't know if anybody's interested in a rocket stove and what it does. But essentially, it's an incredibly efficient way of getting heat, because it runs on a very small amount of wood that's been chopped up into sticks, and it will burn those sticks to a very high degree. The bottom of these stoves, they're normally made from like a paint can or, you know, something like that. So it's a relatively thin steel, and the bottoms of these things absolutely glow red hot. It's absolutely incredible. And you know, you're just talking about a few sticks. What you'd really use to light the fire with, you know, kindling. You run these little stoves on kindling. Its principle is that the fire is at the bottom of the can, and the fire happens at the place where the wood enters the little firebox, And that's fed by gravity. So the sticks are kind of pointing downwards, and so as they burn, the sticks will gradually go down the tube, the feeder tube, and burn away. So it's kind of self-regulating. If you want to stop the thing, you can close off the air supply, or just take the tiny sticks. I mean, it will burn out pretty quickly if you don't keep feeding it. And it's called a rocket stove. If you go to YouTube, you can see many. It's an incredibly ancient design that has been brought up to date because we've got lots of tin cans and bits of pipe lying around. So I made mine a few weeks ago. I made a little YouTube about it. That is made from a drum, a baby oil drum. It's only about 2 feet high. It's just a marvellous thing. You know, you can chuck some sticks into it and get it running, and in a few minutes you're benefiting from the heat of this. You know, a lot of times you're making a campfire, and you got a few bits of wood, and you make a huge stack, and only when this huge stack is burning massively does it give off any useful heat, whereas this thing is starting to radiate some good heat in about 5 minutes. You can fill them up with sand, or I actually have been using cat litter, Fuller's Earth cat litter, because it's a it's what's called thermal mass. So what you do is you build this box, you know, basically you have the can, a large can, like a little mini oil drum or something like that, or in fact if you have an oil drum and some largish pipes, that makes a brilliant one. And you make my particular design has one tube that goes up the middle of it, and then off the side of that I had to cut a hole into the side of the tube, and into the side of that goes another tube, which has a little plate halfway across it, so that the air can come in from underneath the plate, and the wood is fed horizontally, this particular model, horizontally into the fire chamber. And because all around it is filled with this earth, this is called thermal mass, so the thing gets really hot because the thermal mass is insulative, and it, as the fire burns, it will heat up the thermal mass. So once the whole thing's kind of burned its way out, the thermal mass is still hot. So you could even take that into like your bedroom, and it would it emit some heat for a couple of hours yet. So this is a marvelous little thing. There's Wolf Baby. Hello. Yes, in a few minutes I'll be joined by Tracy Kennedy, who has some news. Let's see. See what's been going on. She's been talking with Two Dog all afternoon, it's been interesting to listen to while I've been outside on my headphones. So, hello everybody. That's lovely. So, anybody wants to talk about stoves and fires and that sort of technology? I had a visitor this afternoon who was looking for ways of heating her place, and I mentioned this because you know a lot of people in Scotland have these old-fashioned fireplaces. And they're pathetic, really. You know, you see, you put loads and loads of fuel into these things, and the room barely warms up. So I'm going around recommending stove. You put the heat to work straight away. You get it to heat something else, and that's why I like stoves, because the stove heats up and starts radiating, and the heat doesn't just go straight up the chimney. As happens with the old-fashioned fireplaces. I imagined that the idea of the fireplace was you put a quite a large fire into it, and it heated up the bricks at the back of it. But fuel being what it is, it's getting more and more expensive to buy coal and wood and fuel and everything. So we need to find more efficient ways of extracting heat and energy from these things. And as I said, the rocket stove is incredibly efficient. What would be kindling for a regular fire is its fuel, and it will run quite hot and quite generously heat up your room or wherever you are. So we're in the middle of some massive weather conditions, and keeping yourself warm is probably one of the first ways of doing, you know, of primary ways of surviving. To have a civilization, you need hot water, basically. If you've got hot water, you can cook. If you've got hot water, you can keep clean. You can basically run your house. And without hot water, your house is a cold, empty, dead place. So, talking of warming things up, let's bring Tracy into the call. So, let's see what she has to say about these things. We're just calling you up now. Hello, Tracy, how are you?
Hi, honey, how are you doing?
I'm good, yes. So, I'm jabbering on about fires and playing with fire and surviving. So, how's your weather?
We are very mild. We had a cold night, and of course I'm going to speak in Celsius as well. And you can look that up, people who don't understand.
Just add subtract 32 and add divide by 9/5 and
32, you get close.
Add all the numbers together and then divide by 5, add your shoe size and your oldest child's age and your youngest child's age, subtract all of that from 9, and what you're left with is 9.
Yes, and when I say chili, we all know what chili is.
I like a nice chili myself. Mm. So, you know, what's chili for Canada? When don't the guys walk around in t-shirts?
When don't they stop the t-shirt thing at around 15?
Mm-hmm.
We're babies here.
Yeah. I thought you Canadians were made of sterner stuff.
we just pretend the stern stuff. We got our muckalucks out at 7. We'd be all suited up by then.
Yeah. You'd have the tires changed at about 3, wouldn't you?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get that stuff called snow.
Yeah, we get stuff called snow.
We used to. You guys are getting more than us.
Yeah.
We used to.
It's weird, isn't it? Where's all the snow gone? Oh, yeah, talking of snow, what's happened to Greenland, which used to be covered in snow? It's now green.
We talked about the land of mush and the permafrost melting, and they're calling their national bird now the mosquito. They're that big.
Yeah.
They have mosquitoes and crows.
Mm. Wow.
Lovely. Lovely weather.
All right. Now, here's a little thing from Greenheart. He's saying he knows a guy who's got a gasification wood stove. Yeah, this is the technology we're talking about. Burns one wheelbarrow of logs at a time. Heats 3 large tanks of water. The tank room is a sauna. And during summer, he fires up the stove about once a week. Uses lots of trees, though. Yeah, so this is the technology. It takes the turns the wood into hydrogen straight from wood by, you know, applying lots of heat in the fire chamber and lots of air, and the hydrogen gas then burns further down the tube, where it's you're able to make a you have your heat exchangers and things like that. It's brilliant stuff. It's brilliant stuff. Tracy is quiet. JP much louder. Okay, well, I can bring you up a bit in the. Oh, that's why. Yeah.
Do you have me turned off?
You were muted, but you were coming through my microphone. So there you go.
How loud I am?
So, how are you doing? I haven't spoken to you for ages.
Oh, doing good. We did a little prayer for Isaac.
Yes, I heard. I was actually listening to the whole show while I was pottering around outside AFK, as they say, on CH, on cordless headphones. I love my cordless headphones. They are just such a great boon, mainly because I'm you know, although I'm a big fat guy, I am quite active, and I, you know, sort of run around and do stuff, and I move quite quickly, and whenever I've got a corded thing on, I always destroy them, because I stand on the cable, I turn my head and rip the box off the wall, and all those crazy things that happen when you're not paying full attention to your world around you. Essentially. I was listening to the show, and you were talking with the Two Dog, which is lovely, and the Revolution Radio crew are used to have heard Two Dog a few times, and that was quite interesting. He was talking about being at war for hundreds of years.
Yeah, and that's a thing. In a sense, of course we have, and where hasn't it been a war for the same thing?
Yeah.
Over our lands, over our souls. Mm. There is no place untouched by this.
Mm.
We just speak of it now, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's really important to understand that there's all these... all these things, these so-called conflicts going on, which we're now realizing are, in fact, invasions. And they're not invasions by the people of the United States. They're invasions in order to grab mineral resources and gold from the banks. You know, whenever there's a country that's got its own independent bank, guess what list it's on? And how many are left? I bet you know this figure. How many countries are there left in the world that don't have a Federal Reserve controlled bank?
Three. Although Syria is on the edge.
Yeah. So let's enumerate the last few that didn't have a bank until they did. The last one was Libya, and before that was Iraq, is that
yes.
right?
Yep.
And we're beginning to see a pattern emerge. Things that are being called evil are those who have their own money. Isn't that interesting?
In Iceland, as far as I know, are the only people who on this great planet has taken their sovereignty back.
Absolutely, and that's brilliant. I have a friend, I've mentioned him before, he was the drummer in a band that I used to play with, but I still see him, and he's Icelandic, and so he, you know, we keep up on all the latest news from there with him, and it's, you know, it's just an amazing thing. Actually, one of the things he told me was that one of the reasons that Icelanders moved out there was originally they were all Norwegian, and the people who became the Icelanders, it's like the Pilgrim Fathers from Central Europe and places moved to America. The
it's equivalent, like Thunder Bay in Canada.
Yeah, the equivalent came from Norway. So they're basically they're like a Norwegian outpost of people who are looking for their freedom.
Yeah, we have the same thing. It's a little place called Thunder Bay in Ontario, which you're usually either Norwegian or Native.
Interesting.
We make jokes of long boats. They don't appreciate it that much.
Yeah, I'm
but they know what they are.
I'm just adding, because Free Sovereign saying you mean Rothschild controlled banks. I mean, Rothschild Zionist Khazarian controlled banks, yeah.
Those are the guys.
There's the guys. Let's name them. Let's name these people. People have been naming names recently, haven't they?
Yes, you're so right. And I still think we don't have it right.
Explain.
Well, the reason I mention this, you know, Rothschild, Zionist, Khazarian, these are the ones we see.
Mm.
The real powers behind the throne, you never see them.
No.
You don't get their last names. Yes, we have the ones that will be taken down. But those aren't the ones behind it.
Can we mention the Jesuits?
Can we cue some Darth Vader music?
can we mention the Archons?
Could be.
Yeah.
Why don't we go there?
Yes, let's hit the Archons. So, the Archons is something that many commentators have spoken about. Actually, not many. A few good ones. One of them is Laura Eisenhower and Jay Widener, and who else talks about the Archons? Robert Stanley did as well. These are a few of the guests that we've had on Wolf Spirit Radio, who talk about these beings. What have you heard about the Archons, Tracy?
I was just surprised you asked me that. What I've heard is that there was a little thing, a bit almost, that was on an internet TV station thing where there was this guy like sucking with a big straw out of people's brains, and he's going, "Oh, this is just a joke. We're not really sucking your brains," as he's doing it. And it reminded me of an old
Star Trek,
Monty Python, Star Trek. Yeah, Star Trek too, but I think Monty Python did it first.
Mm.
Where there's these beings who can transform, and they take from our reptilian brain, and we're probably infected after they eat us.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I'm going out there right with you.
So that's very interesting. Yeah, and so there's, and then there was the one in the Star Trek.
Do you remember that one where people are sitting there and people are drinking from their heads?
That's right. And that was an invisible, other dimensional being. I think they had to have shine a particular kind of ray on them, a beam, and it would then light them up and you could see them.
Yes, that's exactly right. And you and I have talked about the ribbon.
Yes, the ribbon changes everything. Yes.
The ribbon changes everything. And we actually have documented facts now that there's been something hanging out, basically, in our magnetosphere that needed a certain amount of energy to fall down. And we have two separate beings. One turns to dust, which they've recorded in Soviet Union, and recorded in Canada as well. Falls down as dust. It's silicone and aluminum and something else.
So this is aside from chemtrails.
Completely aside. It's something that's been waiting there for Lord knows how long, reseeding the planet.
Right. So this is stuff that is living outside. So this is what they call
Yes,
the fluffy area of space that we're moving into.
Fluffy bunny is just raining on us and activating particles that have been waiting since the last creation.
Yeah. And here, and the last time that we moved through this area of space, of course. So here we are, and I'm looking here, and then there's Hurricane Irene.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a new one? Have I missed something? I thought this one was called Isaac.
There's Isaac, and Irene, as far as I know, has disappeared.
All right. Because I've got friends in Vermont, and I'm seeing flooding progression clips in Killington, Vermont. So, yeah.
Maybe I didn't see that. Maybe it just started today.
Yeah, maybe. I'll check that out.
But this one was definitely picking up structure. So forming into something else.
Yeah.
From a tropical storm to a hurricane.
So
that stopped. I haven't relooked.
So, the ribbon.
The ribbon.
The ribbon. How long have we got?
It's we are here now.
Yeah. Let's be grateful for that.
We're getting it. We're getting it. We have had so much ionization, planetary, extraplanetary ions coming in that even NASA has to speak of it now, and they're calling it star water.
Ah.
And they're saying it's because of methane, not that
hot. Yeah, right. Oh, swamp gas.
It's a reflection of swamp gas and Venus, and Venus ejected a pillar of light with pauses that look like Jacob's ladder.
Dotted line?
Yep.
Dotted light?
Yep.
Well, how the heck do you do that?
Apparently you can't, and yet there it was happening.
Wow. That's an interesting thing. I haven't seen that one. I have to. Have you got that on?
Yeah, I got it. I got it. I'll send you that picture.
Cool.
And I laughed. I laughed because I've been doing this thing. I've been talking about, you know, I love old stories, right?
Yeah.
And I've been trying for 2 years to put all the old stories together.
Well, there's a project for you.
Oh, I think I got something.
Oh, well done. What you got?
I have an ancient alignment of Venus, Mars, and Saturn before Saturn had rings, and Venus was on the other side of us.
So, according to Velikovsky, Venus came from Jupiter direction. It swung past us for the event that we called the Exodus, caused the rising and falling of the ocean and all that stuff, caused the 10 pollutions, which we call the 10 plagues. That's where all the insects and stuff came from. Is they came from Venus, and literally seeded our atmosphere with its atmosphere. We had an event recently with the transit that we were directly in the path of the tail, albeit now invisible, of Venus, and we got more of the same stuff.
That's amusing. I hadn't gotten to that chapter yet because I was still going to the scientific-y stuff.
Yeah.
But that actually makes sense. Yeah, I think all of our ancient myths, even why our old heroes always have a scar on their face, like Mars does, is plasma that we're seeing now, the noctilucent clouds that we're seeing now, the weird kind of bumpy ones. I think we are in the time that we've all said, and seeing these things like our ancient ancestors everywhere on this planet used to draw this time of beautiful things and amazing drawings, and all of a sudden we started drawing stick figures, which now is what scientists use as their plasma figures. I'm thinking we're revisiting this time and space.
Well, we are on a planet that is revolving, and it's being dragged along behind the sun as the sun is scooting through its solar system. Some people say it's Sirius, some people say it's Alcyone in the Pleiades. Whatever it is, Alcyone is a big star, very big. Obviously, Betelgeuse is even bigger, but that might blow up soon. Have we heard anything about that, actually?
As far as I know, Betelgeuse has transformed.
But we haven't seen it yet.
Well, we won't see it.
Oh, yeah, for another squillion years.
<That's true. laughs> It's still divided by nine, that.
Yeah, that's right. So, by the way, those of you who may not know, if you look at Orion in front of you, the left shoulder of Orion the Hunter is Betelgeuse. Is that right? Yeah. And the opposite one is Rigel. Bellatrix is the other shoulder. I think I'm right on that. Anyway, yep. It's one of the upper stars of the Orion constellation. So yeah, there's Betelgeuse. Now, where was I? I was rambling a bit because
we were just saying the when. The when is we have the preamble now, and I'm still sticking by my December 9th, 20th event because it stopped in the sky for 3 days. Gerald will go on and on, but yeah, stopped moving and continued on and changed every star it hit.
Hang on. Can you repeat that story again?
Okay, so we are getting this ejection from galactic center, and it's wide and it's relatively fluffy on the edges. It has ejecta, which has already hit us, is hitting us, it will not stop hitting us. But the mass of the ribbon that they can photograph with NASA, which they've only been able to do recently, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, it stopped for 3 days.
It stopped?
Stopped.
Oh. So why would it stop? Would it... how? Because this is coming out from the center of the galaxy, right? It's
from the center of the galaxy, apparently. Yeah.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Yeah, and this is like the thing will continue. This is a cyclic thing. There's subwaves, but the main wave is like 26 million years, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so 26 million years ago, we had this, and when they look in the fossil records, they look at 26 million years ago, it seems that everything evolved all at the same time.
Yeah, miraculous, spontaneous evolution.
And no missing links.
Yeah, no missing links, it just happens.
Yes. So this is an interesting thing. This is what we're kind of and really this is what we're talking about when we're talking about the ascension. I believe is that it's the effect of this ribbon passing through us. Now, the ribbon is energy. It's energy on all frequencies. It's like going all the way from infrared through to visible light, through ultraviolet, and it's not what's the word? Homogeneous. It's kind of lumpy, isn't it?
It's what we call plasma. So energetic, changing, evolving light. Yep.
That's right, and very much like we used to see in Star Trek. You know, they oh, there's a cloud.
Yes,
and it's got these tendrils and stuff like that that join together and appear alive. And of course, it must be conscious. You know, to be because it's part of the galaxy and it's part of the makeup of what we are. And it has aliveness in some kind of way.
Yes, this is like the spark of life, basically. And it stopped because maybe, I don't know, maybe it saw something in light.
Wow.
Conscious being. I am just projecting, of course, but or, it did stop.
Or? It's all relative. And it didn't stop, but we moved with it. How about that?
Sure.
That might be, you know, that might be another way of looking at it. That it doesn't. It's not because it stopped moving, but we the whole system, the whole solar system moved in synchronization with it. Maybe. I don't know.
We saw something we liked and moved closer. Yeah. I'm not opposed to that either.
Yes. Yes. So that's interesting.
The whole 3-day thing is problematic at best, but interesting. We have this 3-day thing in, I think, every single culture on the planet. 3 days for death, 3 days for transformation, 3 days to go through the trials of the Nile. 3 days.
Yes.
It's important somehow. They knew something. I don't think we were all sitting around scratching our bums for 2 billion years, that we might have been onto something and perhaps thought, okay, if our children will be very, very slow later, how do we put this so they'll get it?
Mm.
Apparently, they underestimated the slowness that would attack us.
Yeah. So, there's the 3 days, I mean, when you have, for instance, a homeopathic remedy, the practitioner normally says, you know, let's see what happens in the next 3 days, because the first thing is that it comes, that it affects your mind, your mental body, because it's the three lower worlds. So it first goes into the mental body, and perhaps thoughts come up and other things like that. Then it goes into the emotional body. That's the second day, the emotional body. And you may have emotional reactions and things like that to it. And then the third day, it comes down into the physical body. And that's where you maybe have physical reactions to the homeopathic. So, and all of these esoteric books that I always read, they're always talking about threefold. Three is everything. Everything is three.
Same. Yeah. Same books I'm reading, and yep. Yeah. Well, perhaps different books, but still on the same note.
Right. So, when we go three, there is always a correspondence. And the law of correspondences, so if there's three of one thing and three of another thing, then they have a corresponding qualities. So, when you have three of anything, like, you know, three people, for instance, one will take the first ray, one will take the second ray, one will take the third ray. Might not always be the same, but that's the group dynamic. And so three is a very interesting very interesting question. You know, what is the nature of how we solve problems? Because we've been taught to solve problems in a dualistic manner. It's this or it's that. You know, it's either this or it's that. And I completely disagree. It's this, that, or it's the other. There's yes, no, and it might be maybe.
And it could be a combo.
Yeah. Because it could be all of them.
Yeah. Bits the answer is all of them. Just choose where you're going with this kind of thing.
So that there's always someone or something that takes the place of the first ray, which is the initiatory ray, the thing that starts it. And then there's something that develops out of that, which is the, depending on which way it goes, it could go to the second ray, it could go to the third ray. So the first ray is the impulse, the initiatory impulse. The third ray is the intelligence that we need in order to manifest. And the crucial thing, and this is like father, mother, son, The second ray is the love between them.
Mm.
Or you could look at it the other way. You could say that the first ray is the initiatory, the second ray is the feminine, and the third ray is the product, like the sun.
Or I'm right, and I'm looking at Saturn, Venus, Mars, and we've built every myth on this.
Saturn, Venus, and Mars. So what about Jupiter? I like Jupiter.
No, we're not even looking at that. I'm looking at perhaps there was a time when Earth moved with them as the Golden Palace, as the place of the gods, as the temple in the sky. Mm. That perhaps that was what we saw in the north.
Yeah. So then there's, you know, the question of the polar rotation. You know,
yep.
That
comes again. Yeah.
Always comes and back to it. You know, we're
they
spinning.
Fell off. They fell away. Something happened.
Yeah. That we've been tilted.
Yes.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I keep moaning on that that when I look up in the north, the North Star seems to have moved to me. It seems to actually be moving around the sky. It doesn't seem to be the fixed point that it used to be. It's like moving around a little circle.
They're staying at the way north.
Yeah.
The far, far north, up in Iqaluit, they're actually recalibrating every night, and they've done it for 2 years. Where north was, and where it is now, way off, JP, way changed.
Yeah, things are definitely changing. You know, and I'm always saying this to all my friends, and they're all going, yeah. No, nothing's changed. Everything's the same.
I get the same argument.
Yeah.
There is no weird climate. I'm like, really? Have you been outside in the last, I don't know, 10 years? What do you mean there's no weird climate? There's a little bit of weirdness, and I don't care where you're from.
Mm.
You have to have seen that.
Free Sovereign is talking about... No, here's the thing. Don't get me started about the moon. Actually, get me started about the moon. That'll give us... Anyway, how about our moon being a fragment from a former Maldek planet where the asteroid belt is said to be remnants? Now, my feeling is... sorry, Tracy?
No, go ahead.
My personal feeling is that the moon comes from elsewhere, that it's a constructed thing. It's, you know, it's... the same as the Death Star. It could well be the Death Star from an ancient story. Star Wars is not a fiction. It's more of a mythology.
Da 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 da. Da.
The Force is strong.
I actually think that was some JP ship. Don't get started on that.
So the moon. The moon. I love the moon. It's so hollow.
It's so hollow.
It's so hollow.
It chimes when you hit it really hard on the outside.
Yeah, big clang. So, and also the idea that it's all right. So here's and I you know we've done this one before, but just for the benefit of the newer audiences, here's a mind experiment. If you were to stand a big magnet on a table, and you take a little helium balloon and tape a tiny little magnet to the side of that helium balloon, and so then you stand by the table with the balloon, and what will happen is that the magnet on the balloon will face itself towards the big magnet on the table, and then if you walk around the table, what will happen is that the balloon will keep oriented the magnet will keep oriented facing the table, facing the magnet on the table. So that is entirely the behavior of the moon. That's exactly what it does. It faces us all the time. My hypothesis, therefore, is that the moon is hollow, and that there's something that is pulling it towards us, that is drawing its It's one face. So I think behind this one face there is a large mass. This could be like the not so hollow side of it, or that there may be a large amount of big magnetic machinery on that. What do you think, Trace?
Well, as if we presume for a moment it is a machine and was parked there, it would have to be anchored to a point, a specific point, and always be aligned to that specific point.
Mm.
As if someone was, you know, parking their horse or their car to a certain thing.
Yeah, you tie up your rope, doesn't it?
Because that's the only thing that explains why the moon does not rotate. It should. Everything spins.
Yeah.
Everything spins. Venus, of course, spins in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
But everything spins except our moon. Every other moon spins. This one doesn't, as if it's parked and was told to stay.
Yeah.
That's right. Stay there.
Yeah. Stay. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
The moon is our puppy, our cosmic puppy in the sky.
Sorry, it started to get a bit cold. I'm just putting a jumper on now. There you go. Nice fair isle knit sweater.
But there's nothing that explains why the moon does not spin other than that. If we go through the theory, where it was a piece of bit that got thrown here, it would still be spinning. It does not spin.
No.
It's not a moon. It is not a bit of star or planet. It is a parked vehicle.
Yep. And that and it's crawling with greys, and they don't want us to come back. The we've just lost Neil Armstrong, and this is one of the great
fake
mysteries.
Lander.
I'm sorry?
Fake moonlander.
Well, I was speaking with William Stillings, who's been my guest on one or two shows and on Muggsy shows. He's a quote industry insider. Let's say, as he calls himself, he's been involved with some of the corporations that built those particular devices, the moon lander and things like that. What he's saying is that we did get to the moon. They did actually go up there. Neil Armstrong did walk on the moon, but there are certain things that were not as we were led to believe. For instance, this is William's story, is that the landing device had a gravity controller in it, and that it didn't blast off with a rocket, that it actually uses an anti-gravity lifting system.
Actually, that makes a lot more sense, and I even understand why you would need to make a fake copy, because they would not want to televise this all over the world. And
yeah. Oh my God. So that's why there was no, you know, there's this whole controversy as, you know, when this fellow took off back from the moon, that hardly made any, you know, you'd think, you know, moving half a ton plus two blokes and bits of rock off the surface of a planet, no matter how low the gravity is, you're going to need a bit of blast if you're using rocket chemical technology.
One would think. If they taught us properly about these things.
Mm. Yes.
And yet, they didn't.
No. Well, because that's part of the secret space program technology. Now, that we also know that it was 1956 when they changed the wording in the patents from investigating gravity cancelling to exploiting gravity cancelling, which means that they've found it, they know how to do it, and they're going to then implement it. So 1956, people, is when we had the first anti-gravity vehicles. William doesn't like us to use the word anti-gravity. He prefers gravity. Because, of course, you know, gravity. Let's talk about gravity. Because we find gravity is a different force from what we've been taught.
Completely. We have electricity, we have plasma, and we have the interaction between these two things. That's not gravity.
And that there's other things that gravity does. I mean, for instance, the current thinking or theory is that gravity is produced by stars and black holes, comes from every direction, and is in fact a pressing down force rather than a kind of sucking force.
And yet they said nothing could leave a black hole. And yet Voyager 2 and 1 took pictures of plasma particles being expelled from black holes. And they're like, oh, there we are, wrong again.
Yeah.
Oops.
So this is, you know, everything that we've been taught is either misinformation because of stupidity or disinformation, that it's, you know, we've actually been told in order to lead us up the wrong path to think that certain things are impossible, like gravity cancellation.
They haven't told us about the fourth element so much. They've told us about electrons, neutrons, protons, but they leave out the morons every time.
The moron. Those subatomic particles.
That are just stupid, want to bump around and say, no, you don't know, you don't know, you don't know, you don't know. Okay, maybe you know, I got to go on and bump this other guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, that seems to be the way of things, does it not?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, well, back to the moon. The wolf baby saying, you know, first time they thought there was something odd about the moon when they saw Buzz Aldrin after the landing. And if you look at that footage of them being debriefed by Nixon and all this stuff, they don't look happy. They don't look triumphant. They don't look like, hey guys, we just went to the moon and back. Look, isn't it amazing? Look, we're here. You know, we've been there and now we're here. And you'd think they'd be a little more pleased about it.
The other thing is everyone else that comes from even orbit of our planet can't stand up at all. How could these guys? They can't stand up. You go out past the planet, you're a hot mess. These guys could stand up and get their pictures taken and everything. Like, it was nothing. There has been no lander where people can just walk off it. They need to be carried because human beings can't do that. Sorry, can't do it.
Yeah, even the people in the space station are suffering from it, and they're just like in high orbit.
They're aging. Yeah, they're aging quicker. That's been admitted. They're aging faster, they're losing their eyesight, they're getting cancers, they're coming back 10, 15 years older under less than a year.
Wow.
And their bones are deteriorating, they have osteoporosis, and these are athletes. Mm. No, no, you don't walk off from being in orbit. I'm sorry, you don't. You can't do it. What we've seen, I still think, is what I like to call wrong. Can't do it.
Mm.
Not with our technology.
No.
Others, okay.
So we've found, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tracy, but we discovered that with the technology that they were apparently having in those days, that it is actually impossible without taking some of the feed from the secret space program and including that secretly in the NASA Apollo system.
100%. Even the stuff they're saying we have now, still not possible, and they still bring back sick people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, completely disabled people who die within 10 years.
gone. So he did well to last this long, didn't he?
Well, yeah. He had, I'm sure, help.
Mm.
But he hasn't been able to walk for the last 10 years.
Really?
Nope, couldn't walk. He was hospitalized. Every so often they shoot him full of stuff and take him out.
Mm.
They parade him. But he can't walk. He couldn't see for the last 40 years.
Wow.
Couldn't see. No. You come back sick. But apparently they have countermeasures, which they're not telling us about either.
Mm.
But we also don't know the side effects of the countermeasures that fix you up, fix your bones, and you got the hour and a half like this, and then next thing you know,
you're back in the buckets.
You're back in a bucket, and, you know, we'll pull you out later. Who knows?
Yeah. Very interesting. So, yeah, NASA's lying to us. What else?
Well, there you go. Yeah. So, there's the moon, hollow. Rings like a bell when you hit it. Apparently, repeatedly.
Mm.
And so, what's your thoughts of who's in there?
Well, we've got the testimony from John Lear. We got the testimony from Bob Dean.
Mm-hmm.
We got various other people.
We have testimony from John Dee, who says he met them.
Ah. What did John Dee say? I don't know that bit. Go on.
Oh, well, when he was drawing up the first globe and dividing us into sections...
Mm-hmm.
He said he got this knowledge from people from the moon who were stationed there. Stationed. Yeah. And the word stationed was not used in that way until after him.
Hmm. Space station.
And then people from Britannia were stationed at other posts. Stationed was not used until Chanti.
Hmm. How interesting.
Got proof.
Hmm.
Cues the music.
We have to get a clip for you, right?
So apparently it comes up often. So what's your feeling? Your real feeling yourself? What do you think, sir?
In the moon. Well, I did a little journey there once.
You flew it in or after?
I flew in. And there's a great big hole at the back on what we call the far side. There is no dark side of the moon, but what we call the far side, which is the bit that points away from us. And when I went in there, it was the atmosphere was very. It was like aliens. You know that bit in the beginning of Aliens when he goes into the big ship that looks like a ribcage? Oh, there we go. It had that kind of feeling. I think the place is crawling with it, with greys.
I think it's Nazis.
Oh, greys and Nazis, yeah. Iron Sky. Iron Sky, I love that film. Iron Sky, the movie. Go watch it. Thank you very much, Tracy Kennedy. This has been Journeys with JP. Join me next week. Thanks very much, Tracy.
Thanks, sweetie. That was awesome.
Excellent. Good night.
Good night.
Oh, yes, of course. Better have some Natural Woman by Carole King. Looking out on the moon.